Good evening, David.
What's up, Rob? All right, so I want to continue. I really like the way we've been starting the last few podcasts by like putting an artificial constraint onto what we're going to talk about. So if somebody asked you, what is the most important lesson that you learned from listening to Jocko podcast number 8, and you could only list one, what would it be?
The observation and the ability to deal with the quote unquote friction. This is something that I'm kind of relating to, like working and living in like New York City, where 1,000 little things add up into some, you know what I mean? Like it just seems like that. And in combat, 1,000 things add up and it clouds your mind. It messes with your judgment. And I didn't know what the term friction was until it was mentioned, but now I see it all the time. And I think about it, like just getting on the subway and bumping into somebody, just like a little, like, you know what I mean? Like that's a little bit of friction. It's a little bit of friction.
So I want to come back to this idea that you just brought up, because I think it's interesting. But I was a little confused when they started talking about friction, so I started taking notes, and then it really crystallized in my mind. It really, when they used the analogy that, have you ever read any of Stephen Pressfield's books, Rob?
Pressfield?
Yeah. He's known for The War of Art, Warrior Ethos, Turning Pro. Are you familiar with him or no?
No.
Okay. Well, they talk about Pressfield in about 23 minutes into the podcast. And he has this great book that I'd recommend to anybody that's trying to create something new. And it's, you know, it's a flip on Sun Tzu's Art of War. He calls it The War of Art. So to him, friction, what they're talking about in the Marine Handbook, in Stephen Pressfield's book, he calls it resistance. And Jocko says, friction is inevitable. You must accept it. Do everything you can to minimize its effects and learn to fight effectively against it. It reminds me of the book by Pressfield, The War of Art. Friction is resistance. Resistance is friction. I don't know if that's an exact quote or if that's my own notes on what Jocko was saying. But what that is it's when, like, Pressfield wanted to be a writer. But for most of his life, he was just kind of like a ne'er-do-well, like a underachiever. I don't want to use the word loser, but that's kind of how he describes himself. Okay. Until one day, he was so distraught at his inability to just sit down and write. You know, most people struggle with procrastination, and Jocko is very clear. He's like, whenever you feel that procrastination, that's when you actually have to push harder, right? And so in Pressfield's book, he talks about he wasn't writing. Even though he wanted to be a writer, that was his dream, he just wasn't doing it. And eventually, I always say, like, how you do one thing is how you do all things. He noticed that over the weeks, he had accumulated a lot of dirty dishes in his sink, and he didn't want to clean it up. And then he literally just made himself clean every single dish that was in his sink. And he knew from that day forward that he was going to be fine, because then he applied that same thing to writing. So every day he didn't feel like writing, he wrote anyways.
He wrote.
Exactly. So I was really struggling. I was like, I think I know what they mean by friction, but maybe I'm interpreting. And then they cleared that up for me. So what I want to
have you read any of his books?
Yeah, I've read The War of Art. Of course I have. Turning Pro. I have The Warrior Ethos. I read the sample version on the Kindle, but I haven't read that. I think those are only two books. I'd have to go back and look. And then he wrote some also fictional accounts of like Sparta that I want to read. And you know, but I'm a little busy with Founders, and I'm reading a biography a week of entrepreneurs. This is kind of like my recreational reading has kind of been crowded out at the moment. But you just said something about friction. You have an interesting perspective, I think, that people listening to this might benefit from. You, in the last like month, you've been on what, like 9 flights?
12, something like that.
Okay, so for those that don't know, you lived in the Northeast, in and around New York City for what, 15 years?
Since 2002, and even more centered since...
So it's about 16 years.
Like, yeah. Because
you just left. So... then you decided the city life isn't for you. You and your wife moved out to the middle of nowhere in beautiful Vale, Colorado. And yeah. Now, so we were talking right before we pressed record that you're back in New York City. You're recording this from your office right now, but you flew back to see your wife this past weekend. So yeah. What is the difference that you feel personally when you're in Vale as opposed to when you're anywhere else?
Oh, okay. So it's definitely like more relaxed. I feel like my mind is more mind rather than me having to like truly think about like when you walk in the city streets, you have to kind of pay attention to where you're going, right? Like watch out for people, watch out for cars, watch out for people not paying attention, because that's most people, because they're just looking down on their phones. So my retention of like podcasts, like my mind will wander to something else that I see, or I'll bump into somebody and I'll lose my focus on the podcast. And it's just a very hard place to focus. It's very hard. It's just constant distractions. So when I'm in Vail, my focus, and I don't know whether this is just because now I live there, I lost it. When I come back here, it's just that much louder. But in Vail, my focus is like 5x. Like I'm able to concentrate. I'm able to listen to podcasts. And when I go for a hike, I listen to podcasts and I'm not interrupted. It's like the best way to listen to them. So, okay,
I think that answers my question. Yeah. So if I had to answer my own question, like what is the one thing, I have two, but that'd be cheating. I'll explain the second one later. But the first one, he puts it into great words. It occurs around 57 minutes into the podcast, and it says, deficiencies in existing practices are identified, outdated structure discarded, and modifications are made to maintain function and utility. And then I put in parentheses, Jocko says this is something you want to do in your own life. Note to self. And I love the wording there. I think it's beautiful writing, first of all. But second of all, it's really describing what everybody that's interested in improving their lives is doing. So deficiencies in existing practices are identified. There's all kinds of things that we do, actions that we take and things that we believe that are not serving our overall goal in life.
Okay.
I just started listening to the Audible. This book has been recommended in so many podcasts that I've listened to, including by Jason Fried, which me and you both like the way that guy thinks.
Yes.
And it's The Guide to the Good Life, The Art of Stoic Joy. And they make this good point right off the rip in the audio version of the book of like identifying what it is that you want to get out of life. And then I think I haven't gotten too far into the book, but I imagine you use that as like the cornerstone for all your decisions. And I think there's just a lot of things that like we let life happen to us instead of being on being the one that's dictating the terms. So
yeah.
Identified deficiencies in existing practices are identified. Okay. And then it says outdated structure discarded. I feel like that's what a lot of our conversations are. We're like, hey, I believe X. Is X actually valid or is it more Y? And then modifications are made to maintain function and utility. It kind of makes us sound like we're robots using those words, but it's basically saying, hey, analyze what you're doing, what you think, and then what you do. And then anything that does not in line with what you want your life to be, like change it. Modifications are made to maintain function and utility. Meaning are you moving closer to the life that you want? Are you spending your time in the manner that when you get to the end of your life, using what I talked about last week, Jeff Bezos' regret minimization framework, picture yourself at 80 laying in bed or 85 on your deathbed surrounded by family. In these private moments, are you going to look back in your life and have these regrets? It's a good way to make decisions now as a younger man. So yeah, I think that is that's my number one. Do you have number two or anything else that stuck out to you?
Well, since it's a training book, and I think they're really... Like the best Marine in the, you know, I don't really have an opinion on it, but it seems like you fear nothing but the disgrace of like running away from anything that you do fear. And it's just kind of like the mentality of a Marine, you know, like if I had to package that in one sentence, that would be it. Like they conquer the fear to run and they only fear the disgrace of running. You know, that's like hardcore Marine stuff that like I find interesting.
Well, it kind of ties into also like I don't think you're born, people are born without fear. Jocko answers some questions at the end of the podcast that they talk about that. They're like, what do you do when you're afraid? And he's like, his advice on how to handle fear is like inoculation. Give yourself little exposures to what you're afraid of. And I think he talked about his daughter being afraid to perform in front of people, but he also talked about when he was head of training that they purposely make, like it's not like you just show up at the range and then it's a nice, controlled, quiet environment, you're just practicing. Like they induce chaos. Mm-hmm. There's smoke, there's loud noises. I mean, basically getting them used to it, they're inoculating them for what they would, what they're most likely, to experience in actual combat.
Sorry, I take that notion a little bit farther. And I think about like shooting a gun. Yeah, I go to the range and I'm calm, but there's something else called like an accelerated heart situation, which is not like normal. Like you can't, like it's hard to train for a lot of these things. And I mean, the methods that they do have to go through to get to like Jocko's caliber, like they, it must be extreme just to get in like those situations and train for those situations.
Let me share with you a thought I had last night, which is really weird because I thought about, like, I've been reading a lot of these like online discussions, and it's centered around like people, very similar to the questions that Jocko gets, like, how do I wake up earlier? How do I work out every day? How do I X? And his response is always
do
X, right? Yeah. And I was like, people always ask Jocko, they're like, do you have any days where you loaf around or like just lay in bed and watch TV? And his answer is like, no, I have an agenda. I have stuff. Like, yeah. I have limited time and I have way more things to do than I have time. Before you ask the question, let me just get this thought out.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? He's been in the freaking military since 18 years old, and he's been in the special force, like the SEALs, I think almost in that entire time. I don't think it's very different from our experience. Like, think about when you turn 18, then you maybe go off to college, and some people, you know, I worked full time when I was in college and started companies, but some people just went to school and did nothing. Like my college roommate, like he just partied all the time. He didn't do anything. He just took 12 credit hours. And so there's a lot of loafing around. I'm like, no wonder Jocko, like, why would Jocko at 40 something start doing these things that he never did when at 25? And how much of a benefit that amount of structure and discipline is now paying dividends to where now everything the guy does, like he applies that same work ethic and it's inevitably successful. I just saw the new book that just came out yesterday. His new book yesterday is number one on the audio charts already. It's called The Dichotomy of Leadership. And it kind of makes sense because he talks about an hour into the podcast. He's like, listen, we had a saying in the SEALs, and he said, look for work. If there's nothing going on, go find something to do. It's very similar to when we get to Bob Hoffman in the later podcast. Me and you've talked about his book, How to Be Strong, Healthy, and Happy. And that's in his book. He's like, no, there's no sitting down. Like, I think he said, like, spade the garden, rake the leaves, clean the gutters. Do, like, he's basically saying there's no free time. Like, go do, you have stuff to do. Go do it. What were you going to say to that, though?
I was just remembering that Theo Vaughn actually asked that question when he was on his podcast. He was like, you get any luxury days?
Did he?
he was just like, no. No days off. And like, this baffled Theo. It was kind of funny.
Something he also said that I love and just should be repeated constantly is exercise is the only thing that affects every other part of your life.
Yeah. The problem with that, I know what you're saying. The problem is I listened to that like early last week. And I remember having like a huge thought, and it was on the subway platform, and I was just inundated with distractions.
With friction.
with nothing but when I was thinking about that, because Jocko was like, yeah, this helps you with you know, just feeling more relaxed or just being healthier, and just list on and on and on just the normal benefits of working out.
You know what's funny? As advanced as the rest of our society is, if you look at like the actual empirical knowledge we have in terms of what's good health, like what makes you healthy, what's the best diet, you realize it's very thin layer of human knowledge with these things. And the one thing, you know, you've seen this was like, oh, chocolate's good for you and bad for you. Coffee's good for you and it's bad for you. Wine is good for you and it's bad for you. You see all these conflicting reports. There's no conflicting reports when it comes to physical exercise, though. So I like that in one sentence he synthesized, like, there's very few empirical things that we know is good for everybody's health. Physical exercise is one of those things. And I like how his podcast is based on military history and then applying the same lessons that come from combat into life, into work, specifically because it is at its root a business podcast. It's in the business category in podcasts. But second to that, they're constantly talking about physical fitness. And what's all the funniest thing on Twitter is when new listeners, they finally like they stumble onto his YouTube page or whatever the case is. And they're like, okay, Echo Charles does not look like his voice sounds.
No, thank you.
And everybody, I see that tweet all the time. They're like, I thought you were like some skinny little guy, and Echo is jacked.
Dude, he looks huge. We've talked about this before, like the first time. Remember, I was just like, I had to look this guy's up. I'm like, who's this little pipsqueak hanging out with Jocko? You know, like, and the guy is like, could definitely stomp the shit out of me. But yeah, I don't know. This is why you never judge a book by its voice, right?
Yeah, right. So there's one other thing that I think, two other things I want to talk about. I mean, I sent you all my notes through text. I didn't think.
No way, I'm reading all those notes.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. I didn't think I'd have like 20, I think I have 20 something notes. But so I don't want to say all of them because that would defeat the purpose. Just go listen to the podcast. But I do want to pull out the ones that stick out in my mind. And I'm looking for it now. It's his description of this battle. So unfortunately, I didn't write down who he is in this sentence, and maybe you can remember. If not, I have to go back. But it talks about this battle that takes place over a few days. It says, he inspired his men to supreme efforts despite the staggering opposition. 5 days and six nights of battles, they killed 1,000 enemies in bitter sub-zero weather. Only 82 of his 220 men were able to walk away from their position.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I want to think about this when, you know, in our own lives, everybody has, well, the next thing, let me tie the two together, because about 5 minutes later, he says, there's a battle going on inside of you. There's a battle you have to fight every day. There's a spirit that has to be rebuilt when broken down. I think everybody has problems, anxieties, doubts, et cetera, et cetera. And one thing that I find helpful, and even though I don't apply it 100% of my life, because I'm not perfect like anybody else is, but you wake up and you have all these things that are on your mind, stresses, things that you're worried about. I think it's really helpful to step outside of yourself and compare what you're going through to what other humans in history have gone through. Imagine being stuck in sub-zero temperature with only 200 people and you're surrounded by 1,000-plus army and you have to fight for almost a week straight. Like, is what you're going through today really that... like it's gonna pale in comparison to that
100%.
And I just think that kind of mental model is helpful to other people if you can train your mind to do so.
So there was two other things I wanted to talk about. I'm looking for one in my notes. I guess you would call it like a Jocko maxim, where it's like, don't pass the buck. If you obey my bad order, that's your fault. And like, I have been thinking about that a lot. And it's like, you know, my wife always calls that managing up. And I think that's a good example of that. And that's a very valuable kind of skill that I think is like undervalued. Like, people often just take their orders and run with it, and even if they disagree with it, they still obey, right? Like, so why not be a little
I think that can be a little counterintuitive. I think
If there's it's situationally beneficial.
No, I'm saying, like, I agree with you. Like, some people are like, oh no, I'm not gonna, I have to obey my boss's orders. And the counterintuitive part I mean is like, hey, if you can identify a flaw in your manager's thinking and then point out to why you're unwilling to do that, if you're working in a good environment with smart people, they're gonna realize that, like, oh, thanks for course correcting, and then let's move forward. If you're working in a bad environment, you're gonna hear, you know, they just want you to, what Jocko always talks about, people in the military are not robots. Like, they're humans like everybody else. So they just don't blindly follow orders, nor should you. I think that's a good test. It's kind of like the canary in the coal mine, like, to see what kind of environment you're in, because maybe you don't know. Like, you don't know because you've been in the environment for a long time. You step outside of it with a fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah.
It's easier to identify that. But if you are unable to do that, if you do think you are identifying an area where they're just flat out wrong, they're going in a different direction, their orders, like in using your words, are are not serving the overall mission of the company. If you point that out and you still, there's no solution or you get pushback, then you probably should be moving on and looking for a different opportunity.
Yeah. So like that's one way to really gauge your situation as well, because you're at least getting a peek into the mind of people above you. And I think that's important. I think that's very, very important. You know, I think about that a lot. Like sometimes people like they get frustrated with their boss. And in my personal life, I hear it all the time. And I ask, well, did you, like, you sound like you know what you would have done. Did you say, hey, I don't think that's a good idea. Let's do this because of this, because of this? Like, and you questions, are the answers usually no.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to, you know, get this last thing out because I thought this was a great saying that Jocko mentioned. Everybody has a responsibility for innovation. Everybody has a responsibility for innovation. And I was thinking of like, what is the best saying that could be applied to business strategy? And like, that is the best maxim that you're going to get out of this podcast to go forth and give to other people, is like, everybody has a responsibility to innovation. It's kind
of
cool.
So the exact quote is, everybody in your chain of command has a responsibility to be innovative. And so with that, what he's meaning, so it's interesting to me because I think what you're saying there is way more acceptable now, especially we can only talk about like the American business climate, right?
Yeah.
That actually derives from the lessons of this guy named Edward Deming, who helped revolutionize after World War II. He helped revolutionize the industry in Japan. So he worked over in Japan a long time. And a lot of the innovations that Edward Deming is credited with coming up with or inventing was then adopted later on after the Japanese manufacturers did to a lot of American companies. And a good example of this was there's a lot of car manufacturing going on in Japan at the time. And in America, there was car manufacturing as well. And let's say you were just working on the assembly line. You saw a problem. You couldn't do anything about it. You'd have to go up the chain of command and then eventually get up to whoever can make the decision. And then they could decide what they're going to do with it. Edward Deming flipped that around. He said that any time that anybody, regardless of where you work at, if you're seeing a problem that needs to be a solution, then anybody could stop the assembly line at any given time. And so his thesis on that was the people closest to the problem are the ones most likely to come up with a solution. And so it works so well with these Japanese car manufacturers. It was spread throughout different industries, electronics. Then Americans started doing it as well a couple decades later. And now it's so common that, you know, you hear sayings like Jocko says, like everybody in chain of command is responsibility to be innovative, which means not only to come up to identify problems, but come up with creative solutions.
Well, we're all working for the same goal in combat. So we're all working in the same goal in an organization, presumably, right? Like this is my team. We're all working for the same goal. So why wouldn't you welcome innovation or at least nurture it? Some part of your culture should have that embedded in the philosophy of business. So,
all right. Well, I think we did a good job covering the lessons from Jocko Podcast 8. In the show notes, we'll also put the rest of our notes that we didn't cover, because you can just scan through them and read them real quick, because usually they are good. I am excited about next week, though. I don't know. Have you looked ahead yet, Rob? Do you know what next week's podcast is about?
I don't.
General Patton.
Patton?
Yeah.
I just screamed that in the office.
So I know his, and just to be completely transparent, I know his name a lot more than I know his story. So I am interested in learning. And this is one of the Jocko podcasts I don't think that I've listened to before. It's based on the book As War As I Knew It. So
he's big in Jocko circles.
He may be one of the most famous generals, if I'm not mistaken. So in any case, if
American,
you like what we're doing,
yeah.
Yeah, if you like what we're doing here, we are going to listen to every single Jocko podcast in sequential order, and discuss the lessons that we took away from this. This all came from a tweet that I saw Jocko respond to like a year and a half ago, that somebody's like, hey, Jocko, when are you going to start teaching a military history course? And his response was, the podcast is my military history course. And yeah. I love
go
the
listen
podcast
to Jocko
medium.
Academy.
I love the podcast medium for learning. That's what I primarily use it for. That's why I've missed out on all the Theo Vons and the other podcasts that you mentioned. So if you, this is the first time you're hearing Jocko Academy, we're going in order. If you're interested, subscribe, and you can go all the way back to Jocko Academy number one and see how our conversation evolves. And shameless plug, I also like to talk into microphones, record it, and put it onto the internet. I have another podcast. It's all about the history of entrepreneurship. It's called Founders. I'll leave a link in the show notes. For every single Founders episode, I read a biography or an autobiography of somebody that's built a company and then pull out ideas that we can all use in our lives. And if you're interested in hearing that, click the link in the show note. Rob, thanks again, and I will talk to you next week for Patton.
Peace.